we read for you. Atlantis, the Dark Continent. A book by Paul Williamson and Linda Braithwaite. Read by JP on Wolf Spirit Radio. Atlantis, the Dark Continent. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Hello there. Here we are once again in Atlantis, the Dark Continent by Paul Williamson and Linda Braithwaite. Tonight's episode starts on a chapter, because we're on page 165. Now this looks very interesting. This is chapter 15, Manipulations of Science. And let me just bring up the chat room just in case anybody's actually in the chat room. There we go. I might not look up very much, but anyway, let's see. I can stop this thing rocking as well. It'll stop that funny noise that everybody's hearing. First world problems. I know, I'll jam a tissue underneath it. That should do it. That always works. Anyway, while I'm waiting for my fingers to complete this little task here, the story so far is that Paul has... There we go. Nothing wobbling now. So Paul has regressed. We've been to two periods now. We've been to the very beginning of Atlantis, and actually say three now. We've been to the Crystal Wars, the end of the Crystal War, and the destruction of the South Continent, the rebuilding of the South Continent, and we're now gearing up to, I suppose, a sort of equivalent to how we are today, in that we're at this part where science is in the ascendant. So, bedtime story, yeah. Check this for a bedtime story. I hope you won't have nightmares. Let's hope that anybody who dreams of Atlantis has dreams of the Golden Age bit. So, Chapter 15, Manipulations of Science, Issues of Control. Many people like to feel in control of their lives, or even in control of people around them. To feel in control, people can make sure that things turn out the way they want them to be. It gives a feeling of being in charge. However, too much control can make life rigid and reduce creativity. When people feel controlled by someone else, they are naturally going to build up resentment and anger towards that person who is doing the controlling. We all have a right to be free and to make our own choices and decisions. People who want to be in control are often very afraid of what would happen if they were not in control. Who would do anything for them if they didn't do it themselves? This can sometimes stem from beliefs that no one understands them, or that they are, in some way, unlovable. But it can be very difficult for those who like to be in control to allow the love and support of others. For myself, I recognize that many of these fears and tendencies regarding control have affected me. I like to be in charge, but I have tended to feel very insecure if someone challenged my authority. The thought of someone controlling me tends to fill me with dread, and I have tried to avoid situations where this would happen. It has not surprised me, then, to learn of a past life I lived on Atlantis, where these issues were very much to the fore in a dark way. For some months before I went through the regressions to this life, I was afraid of it. In this lifetime, I knew that I had tried to control people's minds, but I did not want to face this. I would be most scared of anyone trying to control my mind. And then it seems that this was what I was trying to do to others. When I finally gained the courage to confront this life, I found it very hard. I felt the character I was in that life to have a heart that was very cold, and I did not like him at all. It made me feel even more somber when I sensed that many of my victims from then were souls who are important to me in my present life now. I did not like that I would cause so much damage and pain to people's minds. Recognizing echoes of this past life in my present behavior made me feel very uncomfortable. I hope that the insights I have gained from this have helped me. We have dated this past life as coming from the middle period of Atlantis' history, after the Golden Age was over. Oh. I knew I forgot something. Story candle, everybody. Story candle. Yeah. Let's see if my microphone is... This is the sound of a candle being lit. Don't know if you can hear that, but that was the sound of a candle being lit. Really, honestly, I did light the candles right in front of the microphone. So...
Right, here we go.
This one... Bedtime stories, buddy. I don't know. Anyway. Paul's regression. The crystal implant scientist. Warning, this might be triggering, okay? Okay. My name is Purli. P-O-U-R-L-I. I live with my family in a large house overlooking the sea. We live on the west side of the land. The members of my family include my father, mother, younger brother, and sister. My father is a scientist. He is researching the power of crystals as an energy source, and he is interested in many varied applications of how this can be used. I admire my father, who is dedicated to his work. His work is his life, and I would like to be like him. He works at the university nearby, but he's also built a laboratory in the basement of our house. Whenever we can, my mother and I help him with his work there. This is what I want to do. I want to become a scientist like Dad. My father is quite famous. He travels to various learning institutions giving talks and demonstrations of his discoveries. He tells us that he has many rivals and people who are jealous of the success he has achieved. That's why he prefers to work with us, because he knows he can trust us and we will support him. One day, I would like to be famous like my father. I would like to work at the same university where he's worked and achieve a high position there. If I learn enough from my father, then perhaps I can make my own discoveries using crystals as well. This is what my parents want from me too. They want to be proud of me. I like working with crystals. When I place my hands close to a crystal, I can feel the energy emitted. My father has shown me how by slowly moving my hands away, I can use my hands to measure the power and strength of the crystal energy. With our experiments, we have to discard most of the crystals that we receive, because we only want to use the ones that are the best conductors of energy. I can help my father in selecting these. It is later now. I have acquired my own research laboratory within the university. The study I had to complete was quite tedious and boring, and I found that I could learn much more by working alongside my father. However, I had to gain my qualifications to become respected by other tutors who are here. My father is still my closest advisor, and I trust him more than anyone. I have decided not to entangle myself in any close relationships. This would only distract me from reaching my goals. I wish to dedicate myself utterly to my work, as my father has done before me. Only then can I gain a high position and achieve fulfillment of my potential. There are many ambitious people within the university, and I will have to work hard to be successful. I have two assistants working with me. One of them, Tarla, would like to be close to me, but I have refused, instead suggesting for her to concentrate on improving her working relationship with me and doing what I tell her. I have had to find an aspect of working with Crystal Power that would distinguish my work from that of my father. The work I have chosen is to do with the influence of crystals upon the human mind. We have been experimenting with how crystals can be used to transmit thought patterns, and then how other crystals can aid the reception of these thoughts in a person's mind. This is fascinating work. We have student volunteers helping us. What we do is attach a pair of crystals to the subject's head. Then, using a transmitter stone, we try to project thoughts and energy through this for the person to receive. During our course, we had to study some human biology, so we are experimenting to find the best and most efficient positions around the head where the crystals can be placed. What we have found works best is to have two crystals which are similar and linked, perhaps coming from the same crystal source. These can be placed on either side of the head, a little above the temple and affecting the person receiving strongly. It is marvelous that we have already been able to advance our research to this extent. The work I'm doing is pioneering, and I'm sure to gain recognition if I persevere. My female assistant, Tala, helps me with the crystals. She is very sensitive to their energies and has been largely responsible for selecting appropriate stones that we can use. My other assistant, Lainstra, helps more with the organizational side and recruiting of volunteers. It is fascinating how people's minds can be influenced. This work could have many applications. It is later, and I am sitting in my office at the university, alone. I have received some devastating news that I can hardly take in. It's a huge shock to me. My father's dead. The laboratory at our home was burnt out, and the charred remains of my father's body was found lying on the floor. Nobody claims to know what happened, but I think it was murder. My father was too careful to allow something like this to happen. Someone must have killed him. I feel bitter and angry. There are too many rivalries and jealousies in this place. Some people will stop at nothing to get their way. My father was a good man, and he didn't deserve this. Who did this to him? I feel like getting them back. And if they killed my father, what's to stop them trying to kill me too? We worked so closely together. Who can I trust? There is no one. My mother is too distraught to help me, so I have to continue on my own. I won't let anyone near me. No one must interfere with my work. I don't want what happened to my father to happen to me. I will have to make sure that I'm safe, and that no one can get to me. One man I suspect is the biology professor, Sherip. He was working with my father and stands most to gain by my father's death. Now he will take over as head of science. I don't like him. He's an unpleasant, shifty man. Sometimes he comes to monitor and help with my experiments. I don't like his interest. If I could gain more control in using the crystals, I would like to interrogate him and find out what he knows. Then, if I could control his mind, he wouldn't be a threat to me anymore. Assuming he had something to do with my father's death, this would be much less than he deserves. We have reached a new stage in our experiments. For some time I have been interested in finding more power in the way thoughts and energy could be transferred using the crystals. I've had the idea that if the crystals were actually implanted beneath the person's skin and next to the skull, then this may increase the capacity of thought transfer tremendously. We have a young female student for this purpose. Many of the students are quite pleased to take an active part in the research we're doing. She is unaware, though, of the full extent of my plans. noticing that Tala is quite uneasy about us taking the experiments to this extent, I tried to dismiss her anxieties by telling her that we will take the crystals out again within a few days. I need Tala to help with the placement of the crystals and hope, therefore, that her anxieties will not impede her abilities in this regard. We give the student a drink. I say it is to relax her. But it is actually a sleeping draught which Leinstra has prepared. We need the girl unconscious for the operation. This has worked, and we have her strapped in a chair. I have tried to plan this as well as I can. We have obtained a healing ointment from one of the local sanctuaries. This can function both as an antiseptic, and to help the skin knit together once the operation has been performed. Also, I want to cut only a bare minimum amount of hair from around the incisions, so the effect of our work cannot be noticed. My assistants can help me with this. Leinstra has made the incision for me. I have two triangular slivers of crystal, quartz crystal, and these I insert carefully. We have to wipe away some blood, apply the ointment, and fold back the skin and flesh. Soon the operation is done, and we can wait for the girl to recover consciousness. It is some days later, and I am in the basement, a darkened room below the laboratory where I normally work. This is where the crystals are collected for the experiments which I do. I am with the girl here. It is a private space where I can work with her alone. I have the transmitter stone in my hand. This is a clear quartz crystal pointed at one end. Holding this crystal in my hand, I can project my thoughts into it and imagine these thoughts from there going into the mind of the girl in front of me. Each time I do this, it seems to jolt her. Her head moves from side to side, and she appears shocked. I have told her that she will remember nothing of what has happened to her, and she must do as I say. At first, I was having some success with my commands. When I told her to tell me things, she would do so. But now, she seems so dopey and uncoordinated. It is like she has suffered a form of mental collapse. I don't really know what I can do with her anymore. I don't think I can repair the damage. Actually, I feel quite confused by this and anxious by my failure. There must be a way in which I can modify my thought input so my subjects will obey me, yet keep their mind intact. I will need to experiment further with more students. It would be a great breakthrough in my research if I can succeed. I cannot think what to do with the girl. She is so confused now, almost like a vegetable. I've told the others I've sent her home to recover. But if I let her loose, she may be taken to a temple of healing. They could discover what I've done. It is very difficult. But I decide I have to kill her. I'll give her a drink. She has hardly any life left in her anyway. It would be a disaster if her mental state was traced to me. There isn't any other way. Perhaps in the future, if any operations do not work properly, then I could take the crystals out before it's reached this stage. I'll have to learn to do that myself. I think it would be possible to explain these cases away as being mental breakdowns. But I hope I can perfect my technique with this soon, so these messy situations don't occur. It is later, and I have performed quite a few implant operations now. Gradually, I have learned to direct my thoughts so I do not destroy the person's mind. I have been surprised and delighted how much response I could get to my suggestions and commands. Usually, my subjects will do exactly what I tell them. It is as though their thoughts become my own. This is exactly what I wanted. I've tried to operate on that biology professor, Sherip, who was resistant to my commands. It was like trying to get blood out of a stone. When I mentioned my father, his face would twitch involuntarily, but he would say nothing. This has made me even more suspicious of him. However, I have instructed him to stay out of my way and keep to his own business, and I hope he does that. At least, then I will have removed him from being a threat. I am having a lot of trouble with Tala. She objects to my experiments and she does not want me to be implanting crystals. It is irritating me more and more. She cannot stop me doing my research. I have had to do many of my experiments on my own in secret to keep her from criticizing me, but she continues to go on and on at me. I am afraid she may soon complain of me to the others, and I can't let that happen. If I implanted crystals in her, then she would do exactly as I say, and I could control her as I wish. Tala is with me in the basement room. She has just brought a consignment of crystals which will be very suitable for our work. I suggest a drink to celebrate. Of course, I have added something to hers. She has a little sip and hesitates. She can tell the taste and knows. All at once, Tala looks up at me, startled. Starting to be abusive to me, she moves to leave the room. I can't allow that, so I hit her across the face. She sits there, quivering violently, pleading with me not to do it, not to do this to her. I feel a pain in my heart, but I cannot stop now. It's too late. I insist on her finishing the drink. Finally, she does, and I prepare the operation. Somehow, I feel very nervous this time, uncertain. I wonder if I'm doing wrong. Keeping Tala in the basement room for some days until the wound is healed, I instruct her to forget what happened. Do exactly what I say. There is a vacantness in her eyes, a sadness. She is not now the woman that I knew. But at least now she will do what I tell her without question, and that will be better for my work. It is some time later. I have been able to build up a formidable reputation for myself across the northern part of our land. Often I travel, giving talks and demonstrations about my work to various groups in much the same way that my father used to do. People are fascinated by what I have learned about the human mind and how crystals can be used to enhance learning and communication. Of course, I keep much of my work secret from the public gaze, for it would be dangerous for me to do otherwise. I still have my two assistants working with me, although when I travel, I tend not to take Tala with me. Her personality has lost too much of its animation to be useful when I'm with other people. There is a large gathering of scientists from across the land meeting together to discuss the power of crystals. I have been invited to present the keynote speech. It is a great honor. This represents the pinnacle of my career. Strangely, though, I feel uneasy, and I do not know why. I am on the stage delivering my speech. Suddenly, there is a disturbance in the room. It is Lainstra, my assistant. He is coming on stage with one of my students. There are military personnel with him. What's he doing? Lainstra is pointing to me, accusing me, showing the audience with the student where I have been implanting crystals. How dare he? He's betraying me. This is a humiliation. I feel afraid. Trying to defend myself, I find that I can't. This is the end of my career. He can't do this. I feel broken. Military personnel are shuffling me off the stage. I have to keep a semblance of dignity, so I don't resist. I thought I could rely on him. How stupid of me. I've been taken to the fortress in the center of the town, to one of the cells that is underground. It smells damp and musty. I don't like being here. The military have been rough with me. They've just thrown me in. Already they have interrogated me. They tell me that if I pass on my secrets to them, they'll let me go. Now I am beginning to understand. This was a setup. Lainstra must be working for the military. I'm sure they're paying him well. By denouncing me in front of my peers, they have made sure that I will be able to work for no one else except them. But I will not agree to their plans. I feel determined about that. I will not let my fine scientific knowledge fall into the hands of the military. I hate them. I hate them doing this to me. They've got no right to treat me like this. They just want to use my knowledge for their own ends. I will get nothing out of it. They just want to make weapons to manipulate and hurt people. I will not go that far. Being on my own, I'm starting to question myself. I'm feeling uncertain. I'm thinking about Tala. I'm missing her. What if she goes through the rest of her life with these crystals implanted in her? She'll never be free. What about the others? I didn't care about them. What have I really achieved? They have taken me to another room and they have strapped me in an immobile chair. I can hardly move. I do not know what they intend. However, I refuse to tell them anything. Leinstra has been here, and I try to spit in his face. I hate him. But now Sherip, the biology professor, has come in with some more military personnel. I might have known he would be involved in this. I feel contempt for him. They have drugged me so that physically I will not resist, but I am still aware of what they are doing. One of them is cutting my hair to the sides. Sherip has some surgical instruments. Now I know what they want to do. This is too much. I will not let them. He's cutting me and I feel the pain. It hurts. Now he is inserting the crystals and they feel cold and foreign. I don't like it. They're trying to take me over, force me to tell them what I know. It feels so uncomfortable. Leinstra has got the transmitter stone. Ah, he speaks too harsh. I can feel the vibration go right through my brain. Ah! He's trying to make me talk. I can hear his thoughts. They rumble inside me. He can't do this very well. Ow! I can feel his thoughts right inside me. He wants me to talk. I will not talk. It just irritates me inside. He can't make me do anything. Ow! He can't do this. I don't feel compelled. He doesn't have the ability. Ah, it feels like my whole brain is being churned up inside. Oh, his thoughts are so loud and ugly. It goes right through me. So repulsive, so awful. He keeps repeating the same thing. I'm not telling my secrets. My head is in agony. Ah! I feel totally exhausted. I'm groaning. I feel totally numb in my head. Leinstra says they'll keep doing this until I talk. I cannot reply. They've taken me back to my cell. I feel distressed and numb. I can't stand this kind of torture. They are trying to control me. It hurts so much. I cannot think straight. Leinstra cannot do it properly. He cannot modulate his thoughts sufficiently. It is later, and they are becoming more desperate. I still won't cooperate. Now they are threatening to bring Tala to torture her unless I talk. Bastards. I will resist them with all the strength I've got. I will not say a thing. Tala is here. They have her in the room. They say they'll cut her, hurt her, unless I agree to work with them. I'm in the chair. Leinstra is speaking to me through the stone, commanding me to do his will. Ah! He still hasn't got it right. He says they'll torture her, cut her, even kill her, if I continue my resistance. It has stopped. I look in Tala's eyes, and I see sadness there. Thinking that I had taken over her mind using the crystals, now I am aware that she knows what is going on. She doesn't want me to talk and is gagged. I can only sense her thoughts through her eyes. But we could always talk with our eyes. My heart is melting and I feel so sorry. Her eyes are imploring me not to give in. They are making me watch while they torture her. They have taken off her clothes and are cutting her. She's bleeding and screaming. It is awful. First, they are cutting her on the arms. She is standing up, held by binds to her hands and feet, so she cannot stop them. They are threatening me. As soon as I agree to go along with them, they will stop. I don't want them to hurt her anymore. I love her. I can't bear this. But she looks at me, and I can tell she doesn't want me to talk. She is so brave. I can feel a change coming over me, feeling sadness, not only for her, but for all the people to whom I have implanted crystals. I just don't. When I see what they are doing to me and to Tala, it isn't right. It isn't right to treat human beings like this. I haven't talked. They are saying one more time that they will kill her unless I agree to work with them. They make me watch. I don't want to see it. Oh no, they've stabbed her. They've stabbed her in the chest. She's dead. They're finished with me now and are dragging me back to my cell. I want to die too. There is nothing left for me. It is later. I have been taken out of my cell and I've decided I'm going to kill myself. I'll pretend to cooperate. The guard is taking me along the corridor. I can see the knife I want to get. I'm walking very easily and willingly. Waiting for the right moment, I take my time. Now! Ah! My body has slumped to the ground. I am floating. It feels grey. I must have died. My body is a mess. I was a twisted mess in that life, becoming so bitter and twisted, only caring for myself. What a dreadful waste. My father appears to me, telling me to forgive myself. I did wrong, and I must learn from that. He knows I loved him, but I became bitter and angry when he died and stopped caring for people. I only wanted fame and position like he had. He reassures me that it was his time to die, and urges me not to be bitter when things like this happen. There's nothing I can do. He hopes I can learn from this, do better next time. I feel ashamed of my efforts. I know there will be a lot to make up. Feeling very heavy around my heart, I realize my main lesson I needed from that experience was to love, to care about others as much as myself. However, especially after my father died, I was far too much obsessed with my work. The main mistake I made was feeling that I would only be safe if I controlled everything around me and everyone. This is what I set out to do. I feel very sorry for all those people now, and I know they did not deserve it. And I know they did not deserve it. Welcome back. Sip of tea. Yes, indeed. Correct. Placement of objects. Yes. Okay. Now, let's put the back. Move in a little bit closer because next chapter. A victim's perspective. I've known Annie for a number of years. Our relationship started with her as my client, exploring some of her past lives. Then she became a colleague when she joined the healing group and we worked together there. This has evolved into friendship and we both try to support each other in various ways. The relationship we share has not always been easy. There has been a dynamic between us where sometimes I would want something very much from her, and she would perceive this as me trying to control her. As soon as there was the slightest tendency towards this, Annie would withdraw, and I would feel very frustrated. Then Annie would remain distant from me for quite a time. we have continued to play through that dance a number of times without understanding the roots of it. Until recently. In the year previous to my crystal implant scientist regression, Annie had two nightmares 3 months apart. These had the appearance of feeling of being past life memories, with both dreams relating to different stages of one particular past life. Until after I had finished these regressions, I had no knowledge concerning the contents of these dreams. During the first dream, Annie experienced herself as a fairly young, intelligent woman, with an articulate manner and expressive face, her eyes capable of bringing forth feelings from deep within her. She worked as an assistant to a scientist who was working with crystals and doing research about their possible effects upon the human mind. She felt close to this man. They had an empathy which made working together very easy. Through their conversations, they could bounce ideas off each other, and she felt she could anticipate what he would want to do next. Her desire was to share a physical relationship with him, but so far he had refused this. Then his father died, and she observed the change in him. He became very withdrawn, secretive, and even cold towards her. There appeared to be a change in the direction of his work, and she tried to question him about this. But she continued to trust him. One day, he made her submit to have a crystal implant operation. She felt so much shock and disbelief, and due to the drink draught she had taken, she could hardly react to him or resist him. The effects of this operation were devastating. Her intellect was not damaged. She could still see and perceive what was happening around her. However, she was not able to articulate it. He had taken away her communication abilities. It felt like drowning and having the life sucked out of her. Yet she looked normal, but she couldn't make herself heard. She could not understand why people could not see that she was not the same. This gave her a feeling of utter helplessness. She carried inside a feeling of intense frustration and pain. With great despair, she wanted to cry out to other people. "Can't you see what he has done?" But she couldn't do it, because he controlled her actions. The second dream was a continuation of the first. With the implants, he made it so that they became physical lovers. She could tell that he genuinely loved her. He felt remorse that the spark was not there anymore in her. From his sense of loss, he was wanting to express his regret by being tender with her. However, for her, she felt this as just a further instance of abuse. He could have had her as she was. She felt he had just wasted what they could have had together. This way of relating together became like a nightmare. She felt herself like a dog who submits to her master's commands. Through it all, her own internal thoughts and feelings continued to function normally with devastating effect. Now, all she could do was wish for death. What had been most important for her had been the expression of her creativity and intellect. After the implant operation, she would never be able to realize this. Going through the physical motions of life gave her no joy on its own. She wanted to die. It felt like being a robot. In the end, she was aware of her arms bleeding elsewhere and a stabbing in the chest. She had nothing to live for. It was like a suicide. When I finished my regressions for this past lifetime, I gave Annie a copy of the tape from these sessions. She had not, until then, identified the man who was the scientist in her dreams. As soon as she started listening to the tape, it came together for her. The dreams that she had had and my regression sessions fitted together perfectly. She was the woman I had identified as Tarla, and I was the scientist who had abused her. It was shocking for me to make this discovery, but in other ways also a relief. At least now, Annie and I know where from the difficult pattern in our relationship originates. I feel that processing through this has made our friendship stronger, but I do feel deeply sorry for what I did to her. Nothing can ever change what happened now. Leinstra. I sensed that Lynn was the soul who was my male assistant, Leinstra, in that life. When I informed her of this and she read my transcript, her first reaction was denial. She did not want to believe it. She told me that she felt no resonance within herself for those violent acts that were committed against me as a scientist and Annie as Tala. However, while she wrote those thoughts, she began to feel a burning sensation in her heart and recognized the truth of what her body was telling her. She sensed that a part of her was making a very determined effort not to see herself involved in such awful things as what happens in that prison. Yet, when she listened more to her heart and accepted what it was telling her, thoughts and feelings about the person she was in that life flowed into her mind. She felt strongly that Leinstra was never loyal to my character then. He was jealous of my relationship with Annie, and was willing to betray me and work with Sherip, because he believed that he had more ability than had been recognized. Leinstra felt insulted by the limited role he had been able to play. Lynn felt very disturbed that as Leinstra she had tried to control my mind. However, she could also acknowledge that for me to go through that experience helped me to understand the pain and distress that I had caused to others, and so helped me to learn. Sometime later, Lynn and I arranged for her to undertake a regression session to her life as Leinstra. It was an intense and uncomfortable experience for Lynn. She found that Leinstra's beliefs and outlook to life were very foreign to her own. Ultimately, it was a broadening experience for her, giving her more feeling of strength to confirm that compassion and tolerance were qualities she wanted to live now, rather than how Leinstra expressed himself. Leinstra was quite full of his own sense of importance and talents, but felt undervalued, especially by Pu'eli. He could be both manipulative and secretive. Leinstra believed that Pu'eli kept his findings far too much to himself and would not share his work. He felt that Pu'eli just gave him the most menial tasks to do. Leinstra felt that if he could be in charge, he would open the research up far more and involve many more people, and then sell the results to the highest bidder. He was quite aware of the damage Pu'eli was doing to people, but did not mind. His main interest was self-promotion. From an early stage, Leinstra accepted money from the professor, Sherip, for providing information about Pu'eli's work. He knew that Sherip, for some reason, was obsessed with jealousy around Pu'eli's family, and particularly the fame of Pu'eli's father. But for Leinstra, it was easy money and what he wanted. The theme of lack of recognition was strong for Leinstra. He very much wanted Tala's attentions, but she seemed interested only in Pu'eli. Leinstra felt despair about this. Then, when Pu'eli inserted the crystals into Tala's skull, Leinstra really turned. He hated Pu'eli for this, and was determined to destroy him. He wanted revenge so that Pu'eli would suffer like Tala had suffered. He realized that he loved Tala, and hated to see her so much distorted by the crystal implants. It was Leinstra's plan to humiliate Pu'eli in front of the Symposium of Scientists. He enlisted the help of Sherip, who was only too pleased to cooperate. It gave Leinstra much pleasure to demean and embarrass Pu'eli in front of the people he most wanted to impress. However, things changed after the crystal implantation of Pu'eli in the prison. This experience did not give Leinstra the satisfaction he had hoped. Then, as Sherip began to take over and wanted to use Tala as a lever to gain information, Leinstra started to back off and have doubts. Leinstra did not want Tala to be hurt, and he left in the midst of the torture. Then he began to feel sick about what had happened. He knew that Tala would be dead, but he did not want to work for Sherip, whom he regarded as even worse than poor Lee. Leinstra could sense no way out, and so he drank a draught of one of his drugs to kill himself. Going into spirit, he could realize how much feelings of jealousy, anger, and revenge clouded his mind. Meeting the souls of Tala and Purli, Leinstra realized that he could have had a close friendship with Tala if he had tried to be with her in other ways than seeking for intimate physical relationship. With Purli, there had also been a potential for friendship if both could have been more open to each other. That life had been wasted. A lot of talent and knowledge was wasted. Other connections. It was very uncomfortable for Linda to realize that she also featured in this regression as the biology professor, Sherip. She experienced imagery of her as this man, killing my father from that life and setting fire to his laboratory. He was jealous of my father's position and wanted more recognition for himself. After having the crystals implanted, Leinstra arranged secretly to take the crystals out again. From there, Sherip was extremely angry to have been excluded from the research and manipulated in the way he had been. Then, together with Leinstra, they plotted their revenge. It was Sherip who killed Tala. Linda experienced it as pure frustration on Sherip's part for not being able to get what he wanted. I feel that I have identified two of my victims from that life, besides Annie as Tala and Linda as Sherip. Each time I have made such an identification, it has left a tight feeling in my chest and a shivery feeling throughout my body. I'm sure that in time there will be more of my victims. There will be more of my victims from then that I will be able to make. I'm sure that in time there will be more of my victims from then that I will be able to recognize around me now. It makes me determined not to make the same mistakes again. Linda and I have both sensed that Denise was my father in that life. My own reaction. The three regression sessions to this past lifetime were very difficult for me to allow. After the first session, I was in shock and I had a severe headache, and my body was shaking for hours afterwards. Only in the third session was I able to allow myself to experience the torture scenes and the events of what I did with my first victim. It was then that I could feel more fully the coldness of this character and his unfeeling nature, which seems so alien to me now. The scientist was engaged in the manipulation and control of people's minds. In my present life, that is work that I do today. With hypnosis, hypnotherapy, and leading personal development groups, I am dealing directly with people's minds. Some of my victims from then have trusted me in our present lives to let me explore deeply within their minds in an effort to help them. Through the memory of this past lifetime, I have become aware of the potential that lives within me to cause harm through working with people's minds, rather than helping and dedicating myself to healing. Each lifetime we are given gifts and aptitudes. However, it is up to us how we use those gifts. We choose. This memory has struck an uneasy chord close to my heart. By only thinking of myself, rather than being concerned for the well-being of others, I could easily make similar mistakes again. I don't want to do that. I am aware that from this period in Atlantis's history, ambition and corruption were rife among the educated sections of the society. There were great temptations for any soul to go off the track. But this is no excuse for what I did. The reason I believe that this particular memory has affected me so strongly is because of the resonance which it has with the work that I do now. I'm sure that part of the purpose of for me choosing psychotherapy work in my present life has been to help heal the wounds of this past. Interestingly, I have accessed a number of other healing lives from Atlantis where I specialized in treating psychological illness. So I'm realizing more and more that my inclination to do this kind of work has been developed over many, many lifetimes. Not all bad. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.